Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. When things go sideways, will you be prepared? Some people are concerned they might have to go for a long time without electricity or even food. That's why I want to introduce you to 4patriots.com. Get preparedness products you can use now, and that could save your life later. My favorite is 4patriots' new solar generator, the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It uses the endless free power of the sun to power lights, your TV, medical equipment, even run your fridge. Plus, it's expandable and comes with a free solar panel. Or pick up one of 4patriots' best-selling survival food kits. Delicious tasting and designed to last for 25 years. They even have kits with real meat, and if the power's out, no worries. Just boil water over a fire, simmer, and serve. You'll enjoy a hot meal and stay safe in a crisis. More smart people than ever are finding 4patriots. Over 2 million customers trust them, and you might have even seen them on TV. I had the folks at 4patriots set up a special page for you at 4patriots.com/drive-on so that listeners of this podcast can see this week's discounts and deals before they go away. Go to 4patriots.com/drive-on, but hurry, these deals won't last long. Save more and get peace of mind now by going to 4patriots.com/drive-on. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and today my guest is Alicia Johnson Niles. Alicia's father served in the U.S. Navy in the 70s, and when she was just a little girl, he was tragically murdered. And for years, this dominated her life and caused a great deal of stress and anxiety. So she's going to talk about her story and how she found the strength to eventually grieve the loss of her father and find a better path with her own life. But first, welcome to the show, Alicia. I'm really glad to have you here.
Thanks. So good to be here. Thanks for inviting me. It's an honor. So
I guess we'll kind of just jump right into the story here. I want to talk about how your father's death impacted your early years in life. And, how did you deal with that at such a young age? When did you recognize the need that you needed to really start grieving in a kind of healthier way?
First thing I want to address is like grief culture. I think even today it's getting a little bit better today, but my dad was killed back in 1976, and a little bit of a timeline. I was 2 years old at the time. My brother was a baby. Of course, I don't have any memories of my dad. So, I mean, I spent, keeping on with the timeline, so my dad was killed when I was 2. My mom remarried when I was almost 6. And then basically, got some core memories of after my dad died. My first memory actually is when I was about 3. And my mom had, with my grandparents, built a little apartment for my brother and I to live in at my grandparents' house. And I remember walking down the stairs to that. That's kind of one of the first solid actual memories I have. So I don't have a single memory of my dad. Oh. And spent the next couple of years, there while she was building a house. And she was amazing. So my memories of my mom being single, so I guess I could kind of break it up into my mom being single to my mom being remarried. And then kind of what happened after that. But
That works.
I remember would talk about my dad all the time. And I'm Christian. I grew up in a Christian family where I was so grateful that we talked about my dad. Like, my mom was very open. She was honest. My dad was murdered by one of his own men. Mm-hmm. And even I always knew from the time I was a little girl that a bad man took my dad. And I was grateful that my mom was honest. I think, my opinion as far as everybody has their own parenting styles and things like that. But I think that was just so important because, kids understand more than people think. And especially back then, So we talked about my dad all the time. We had his picture up. We talked about how we were going to see him again. My mom made sure that we knew about his personality. He is from DC and my family is from Utah. And so every summer we'd go out and we'd visit my dad's grave, and we loved visiting my dad's family and had that connection. So then when I was about 6 years old, right before I turned 6 years old, my mom got remarried, and my stepdad is absolutely wonderful. Like it takes an amazing person to come and take on two little kids and a widow of somebody who's, you know, kind of like a superhero, you know, I mean.
That's right.
Anyway.
Big shoes to fill, right?
Yeah, very big shoes to fill. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then I remember people are so excited. Well, leading up to that, people are like, oh, you poor thing, you don't have a dad. Oh, you don't have a dad. And like, even the memories from clear back then, it's like, I had this amazing dad that I didn't know. And I don't know, there was, even back then, there was that kind of void, I guess. But sure. The day they took my dad, the day my mom and my stepdad got married, you know, happy occasion, whatever, but there were some things that bothered me. I remember getting upset with my mom, like, when I found out, well, first of all, guess who her bed partner was growing up? That was, yeah, wasn't happy about that situation as a 5-year-old. And then she was changing her last name and I lost it. I was just like, you know, don't you love daddy anymore? So I remember little things like that where there was, I don't want to say they were grief necessarily, but now that I look back, it was part of grieving.
Sure.
And so the day of their wedding, they actually took my dad's picture down, which, you know, I mean, it's to be expected, especially back then. You know, the attitude back then was like, and even today, like, oh, you're so lucky you don't remember. Oh, you're so lucky you don't have any memories. You know, you didn't remember the knock at the door. You don't remember, oh, you're so lucky you don't miss your dad, kind of thing. And I believed it. I mean, It's not like people were saying that regularly, but that was something that I picked up on. And there actually, as I looked back when I got older, there were a lot of things that happened during those years that I think one of the reasons I'm doing this, I mean, I'm writing my book because I want to help other little kids who might have gone through this, because it's the perspective nobody would really think of until I dug into it when I was 30 years old. So,
yeah. And such a long time period. You mentioned, you know, helping little kids, but it can be helping adults who were little kids at, you know, such a difficult time. And, you know, kids don't necessarily know how to grieve. Like, death is a almost a foreign concept when you're such a little kid, because everybody that you've ever known literally your entire life has always been alive. And so what is death? That's such a strange thing to even think about. Until it happens. And then all of a sudden, now, where did that person go? You know, and then you get into the spiritual kind of conversations of, you know, the heaven, you know, like, where are they? You know, where are they physically? Where are they spiritually? You know, what happens to them? You know, all of these questions that a little kid would have running through their minds. And, you know, unfortunately, not every parent is equipped to be able to answer those questions. And they're difficult questions even for adults, right? But, you know, being able to talk to a little kid about that is rather difficult, I would imagine, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think also kids don't show grief, really. I mean, maybe they do. Like, if you know what to look for, they do. They absolutely do. But, you know, it's just kids understand more than you think they do. Like, I mean, I like how you were saying, what was it exactly? It's just like how little kids don't really grieve. They don't really understand. So a few major negative byproducts of losing my dad. My core personality, or what I thought was my core personality, was actually shaped by that loss. I remember being a people pleaser from the very beginning. And when I did some digging when I got older, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I mean, it makes sense. And actually, I did a little bit of research later where I'm like, oh my gosh, like, so when you're a toddler, everything revolves around you. Mm-hmm. So when I was a little kid, I was always trying to prove myself that I was worthy, kind of thing. That I just remember feeling like there was something wrong with me and I had to be better. And, you know, to me, what makes sense is my dad was a superhero. He was amazing. God took him away from me. So I wasn't good enough for my dad. It must have been my fault.
Almost like a punishment kind of thing. Is that what you're trying to say? Yeah.
Almost like you're not good enough. You know, it's you don't deserve this kind of thing. And I don't know how exactly I got that mentality, but that's the way I grew up. And my mom, she, huge family, tons of cousins. I mean, there's no shortage on the love and the attention. And, you know, right. I'm very blessed with my family. Even my stepdad's side of the family is just absolutely wonderful. My dad's side of the family, they're great. But I still remember even before my mom got remarried that I was always trying to like make people happy. And also, the other thing that was huge was, when you're talking about how little kids don't understand the concept of death, unless they've gone through it, which I did before I could create a memory. Right. So I grew up in absolute terror of losing somebody else. Like it was kind of a juxtaposition where I'm like, I don't remember my dad. But if my mom leaves the house, I am holding my breath and praying she comes back safely.
Yeah.
Like death was so big to me when I was little. It was huge to me when I was little.
It almost sounds like just kind of trying to think like a 2-year-old or, you know, young child, trying to think about that whole concept of consequences. Like if I'm not good enough, then this happens, you know, but it's not like, you weren't good, so you don't get dessert today, or you didn't finish your dinner, so you don't get dessert, you know, that type of thing, you know, where that gets taken away. This is on a much bigger scale. And so to you, it probably seemed like if I do everything perfectly, then everybody gets to stick around and be a part of my life. But if I mess up, if I slip up just once and I make somebody mad, or I do this one thing wrong, then somebody's going to leave. And so I can kind of understand where you're coming from with being a people pleaser and certainly having high anxiety, right? Because that would be a super stressful thing to put the weight of the world on a little kid's shoulders and say, you got to be perfect. Otherwise this person's gone, you know, like who can handle that? You know, that's a lot.
And I think a lot of it too, I think that is secondary to the fear of just not even like, if I did feel like I have to be, I'm not good enough. I'm not as good as everybody else. You know, my cousins have their dads, and I really don't think it was a conscious thing. But when I look back, it's kind of like, this is going to sound so weird, but I can still feel those feelings.
Yeah.
Like I felt less than.
Sure.
But I think also, you know, feeling less than, feeling less capable goes hand in hand with the fact that people are going out and having fun when I was afraid to do certain things. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, you know, I noticed there was, I felt different. And, but just the biggest thing, like, you know, I feel like with COVID and everything like that, it seems like even through high school, a lot of times, unless you've experienced a death or a loss, or some kind of trauma, which I guess everybody has, but correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like a lot of people aren't necessarily as concerned about their own death or losing a loved one. It's not like that's kind of a, you know, heavy on their minds kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any poll data to go off of on this, but just, you know, kind of anecdotal evidence or whatever, just what you see. Like, I think, I mean, in my own life, I'm more concerned for my family and the people who are close to me than I am for myself. Like, I wouldn't have a problem standing in front of, you know, somebody who's about to, you know, shoot one of my kids or something and taking a bullet for them. Like that,
right,
to me is just like a no brainer. Like I would do that in a heartbeat. Obviously that would have negative consequences on me, but like, I don't know that well, here's another way to think of it. Like, some people maybe they might have this this thought process of how could I live with myself if I let that happen? You know what I mean? So yeah, might as well take that bullet or, you know, jump in front of, you know, whatever, you know, to save the folks who are closest to us. Right. And so, you know, maybe that's the mindset, right?
I think more so. Yeah. Actually protecting. Yeah. Knowing that life is fragile and being protective because I knew I didn't have much control, but if, you know, I'm like, if prayer works, then I'm going to be praying that they're safe. If there's anything, because I was the same way, like not only did my mom get remarried, but she had five more boys. I was the oldest and I had six younger brothers. And I would have taken a bullet for any of them any day. And it, but I kind of felt that over hyper anxiety.
Yeah.
For their mortality, for my mortality, just like kind of a terror grip because good people died. And I think that's the biggest thing is like there are bad people out there, good people die. And like, I'm making it sound like I sat in a hole and was like rocking back and forth. That's not the case, you know, but
sure.
I you know, even today, that PTSD is very, I've been diagnosed with it. Complex PTSD is very real. And those triggers, like when you lose a loved one, especially somebody that important, you know, it doesn't matter if you are 8 months old, like my brother, or 2 or 20, you are going to have those triggers and it's okay. Like that's anyway.
Sure. Yeah. Now as you got older, you kind of recognized, I think you mentioned in your 30s, you started to recognize that, yeah, there's a grieving process to go through, and I know everyone grieves in a different way. But how did you kind of overcome some of these the anxiety and the people pleasing, or I mean, perhaps you're still in the process of working on those things. But you know, what did you do to kind of help yourself once and you realize that these were issues stemming from this incident?
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to kind of go back to a little bit. I got off on a tangent, but just some of the things that happened after my mom got remarried. They took my dad's picture down.
Yes. Yes.
And that was the biggest thing for me, was because it was, I already kind of had this underlying, you know, I need to work hard to keep people around or to be okay. And then when my dad's picture was down, they took my dad's picture down. It was like, he doesn't matter, therefore I don't matter. And it's not like I consciously said that, but I also, that was a sign to me from my parents, you know, you've got a new dad now, respect your new dad, which a lot of people do. This is our new life. We, you know, our old life is behind. And for me, that was super damaging because not only was there this unresolved grief, but then it's almost kind of like, I was still young enough that it's like half of who I am doesn't matter, therefore I don't matter. Mm-hmm. And my mom still, like, she feels so bad. And I'm like, excuse me. But it snowballed. Again, stepdad, kindest man in the world. No, that was an adjustment, but it was like I turned to food for comfort. I ended up gaining a lot of weight. I ended up getting bullied. I ended up, you know, hated myself for my weight. I had all sorts of, you know, childhood. I was, you know, I was picked on quite a bit growing up, and it's, I don't want to be like, it's all because my dad died. And I don't like to think about that, but then I look at it and it makes perfect sense. Sure. People are like, you can't be loved if you don't love other people, or if you don't love yourself. I hate that when people say that, but it's kind of like, I saw myself as a second class person growing up. Therefore, I was treated like that second class person because I was teaching people how to treat me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and that's a good point. Yeah.
So, but yeah, eating disorders turned to bulimia a little bit. I was very attracted to narcissistic people, friendships, dating, things like that. I'm like playing my violin. My life was so hard. My life was harder than it could have been. And what I feel like, and another reason I'm so passionate about helping these people is, okay. So mom got remarried, took dad's picture down. The biggest takeaway from that was like I didn't talk, I did not allow myself to talk about my dad for 6 years.
Okay.
And so, you know, lived a happy life, whatever, did my thing as I was sitting there stuffing my emotions and eating like a piggy. And one day we were talking, I was talking to my mom, and I was about 11, and I asked her a question about my dad, and she had some really cool things happen. She, like I had a dream when I was a little girl, and I was wearing this little purple, my mom made like all my clothes, and then she stopped when she started having boys, and she's like, well, you know, sorry, gave all my clothes away. I'm like, wait, those are mine. Sure. Anyway, but I had this dream about my mom and my dad and my brother and I walking home from church when I was about 4 years old, wearing this little purple and green dress, and they were singing the song, and that was it. And I told my mom, and she kind of, her eyes got all big, because, like, you know, we hadn't talked about my dad for a while, but it was just kind of, this conversation came up, and she went up and she got a box full of things, and one of them was, I might cry. One of them was my baby, like my christening dress. Another one was the last birthday present my dad gave me. It was this little red and red, white, and blue dress, of course, very appropriate.
Yes. Yeah,
and
sure.
Then the third one was that purple and green dress. And she's like, I don't know why I kept this. And then she told me that song that they were singing was sung at his funeral hymn.
Anyway, oh, sorry. Wow.
So, you know, that was probably the first big spiritual, like, I'm here. I'm still part of your life. You know, I always knew that he was looking down on me. Mm-hmm. That's something that anybody in any Sunday school class will be like, oh, he's looking down on you, right?
Of course, yeah.
But that was the first time where I'm like, he showed me, you know.
Yeah.
It was, anyway, so that opened the conversation a little bit.
Yeah.
Because about 11.
And having those conversations, I got to imagine, are kind of like the first steps to that path to, I don't want to say moving on, but, kind of learning how to grieve and
yeah,
stuff,
living
right?
with it.
Yeah, exactly. And we have to live with it. We've all lost somebody at one point or another that, you know, from, you know, whether it was, you know, they were close to you, like a, you know, a parent, or they're, you know, some other, you know, relative. We've all lost somebody, but you just have to learn how to live with life without that person. I mean, that life does go on. As much as it may not feel like it's going to at the time, but life does go on, and you do have to figure out a way to live with the hand that you've been dealt, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think it's just one of the biggest things with grief to me is, like, society still today, it's like, oh, they died last month. Move forward, move on. It almost seems like, unless if they're really not thinking, it's like, you know, it's almost like forget that person, and moving on means forget about the person instead of allow them space in your life. And, you know, I was kind of going over the, oh, well, you know, had bad relationships and eating disorders and blah, 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 and didn't like myself and was afraid of everything. And I had some great experiences, of course, but those were kind of tainted a little bit along the way.
Yep.
But like what you were saying earlier, when I turned 30, I was talking to, I was actually on a date with this guy, and I knew that his mom had just died of cancer. And so, oh, that was another funny thing is, speaking of society, people are like, don't tell people about your dad. Like, it's going to scare them off. I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, I didn't talk about my dad. And then he was mentioned his mom. And I'm like, well, my dad died too, but I was only two. So, you know, I don't have any memories of him, and, you know, whatever. And he's just like, you have every right to miss him. You have every right to grieve him. You don't have memories. I have memories of my mom. And that, like, having that validation, like, you don't remember him, but you still have the right to miss him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, strangely, it took validation from somebody else. But, and again, if my mom knew, she would have helped. She would have stopped it, you know, but I don't think anybody knew what I was really going through. But when I got that permission from him, well, because to be honest, even my dad's mom, I'd ask questions about my dad to certain people. And I honor and respect that people grieve differently, and they need to, and we need to honor and respect their style.
Sure.
But she didn't talk about my dad, and she said, it's not fair for you to ask questions about your dad. You don't remember him. And so that, I think that was another thing that just kind of cemented it into, like, you're broken, you're weird if you miss your dad. But then having this random guy bring it up and just be like, you have every right. Like, I knew I did, but that gave me the permission to move forward with it. And so I even started researching his death because, yes, he was murdered. We didn't know anything about the guy who killed him. I'd asked my mom. She told me what she heard, which was, your dad was a narcotics officer in the Navy. The guy who killed him pled insanity and got away with it. I mean,
oh, wow.
Imagine from being a little kid. And again, I wouldn't have an either way. I would not have had her lie for anything. Like, parents out there, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm going to tell you what to do. Do not lie to your kids.
Yeah.
Don't lie to your kids. They're going to pick up on it.
Right.
But anyway, like, we didn't know anything that happened. Like, we didn't know what happened to the guy who killed my dad. And so I started doing some digging. And along with that, it's kind of like my research to find out what really happened to my dad opened the door for my grief as well. So, and I realized the more I allowed myself to miss my dad and I allowed him to be a part of my life, the less it hurt. Like, okay, being able to have that solid good cry. And, you know, I need to be honest, back when I was 17, so after my conversation with my mom, I'd notice little things, like him would come up every now and then. But then I had the opportunity to go back to DC. So we'd go out to visit my dad's grave every summer. Oh, all three of them before my mom got remarried because, you know, expensive. And, but then from the time I was in kindergarten on, we didn't go to Arlington because Utah, Arlington, opposite of the country, big family.
Sure.
So, anyway, I got to go back east and visit my friend who had moved out there. And I went to my dad's grave. And I remember, because again, leading up to that, it's like, he's just a superhero. He's just a great person. I'm lucky, grateful to have this, every spiritual connection, whatever, no big deal. I'm not going to cry at his grave. As soon as I saw his name in stone, just the floodgates. And it's amazing what a huge relief it was to look at it in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Just be like, I could have seen him every day. I mean, I can't say this for sure, but I imagine that I could have seen him every day and then gotten the news and still felt, I felt the pain that I would have felt just seeing him and missing him. And it was the most healing thing to allow myself to miss him. So,
yeah. And I think that's an important takeaway for folks is, I don't care how many years have passed or how old you are or how old you were when you lost somebody, it's okay to miss that person. It's okay to talk about that person. It's okay to, even cry if you need to, if that's your way of expressing that emotion, do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
And like you said earlier, everybody grieves differently and it's okay. You should grieve differently. Some people, they may not have any, big emotions years later because they've kind of put it behind them and fine. That's their thing. And that's how they cope with things and good for them. But there's other people who have these big moments, kind of like what you just described. And that's good for you too, to be able to have that, you know? Now later on in life, you discovered the TAPS program. Could you tell us a little bit about that experience with TAPS? And actually, could you tell us what the program is and what it's all about? And then how you kind of discovered it and came about, in that organization?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as once I was with TAPS, that came along when I was, how old was I? 40. Oh my gosh. It's like, yeah. It's weird to think how old I am. So I was 30 when I started researching my dad's death. And one thing it was the most rewarding experience, like allowing myself to feel that and I didn't get all my answers yet. I'm actually writing a book. It's called Angel in Arlington. And obviously, after sharing the experience, when I felt that connection with my dad in Arlington, it's kind of like a double,
Sure.
My co-author is like the two angels they're connecting. But anyway, one thing that I think, like you were saying, that with a lot of your listeners are military, active military, former military. I cannot stress the importance of battle buddies. I got in contact with my dad's friends and I got to hear who he was through them. Mm-hmm. And so that going hand in hand with me allowing myself to grieve was the most healing, incredible, amazing. They are my closest friends. I love them. So got to know them. And as I got to know them, I started working on my book. I'm like, this is important. Like, there are these kids out there. There are people out there who might feel the same way that I did. And just being able to have that validated grief and being able to allow myself that connection and to be able to learn more about my dad through the people that he served with was, I mean, my confidence just skyrocketed. And then as I was doing some, you know, getting more involved in the military community, I saw a blog post by the most amazing girl, her name is Amy Dozier, and she lived in North Carolina. I'm in Utah, and I saw this blog post about her and her daughter. Her husband was killed in Afghanistan when her daughter was 13 months old, and I connected with her, and she told me about TAPS. So TAPS is Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. It is the most amazing organization, and the way it changed me was, okay, so the founder, her name is Bonnie Carroll, and her husband was killed in a plane crash. I believe it was in 94, 93. I can't remember. I know that TAP's 30th anniversary is coming up this year. So
okay,
it's a big deal. But Bonnie's husband, a brigadier general, he was killed in a plane crash and with several other men. And Bonnie was like looking for her support group. Because, I mean, peer-based support, where are your people? She was looking for her people and she couldn't find them. Mm-hmm. And so she took the money that she got from, you know, losing her husband, and she started this nonprofit. And it's just like they have different retreats. They have a National Military Survivor Seminar every Memorial Day in Washington, D.C. Definitely share the website. They've got resources. They've got ways to connect you with, like, if you don't know where you're going, it's like, you know, as far as like legal documents and if you need help or anything like that. But they have all these programs to help people surviving family members of people who served in the military.
Yeah. And so it's more than just a support group type of thing. They provide, like you said, paperwork and legal resources and that type of thing. They can help you
connect
out with.
You.
Yeah, they can connect you to the right resources for mm-hmm. those types of things. But also the events that they have and the kind of community around the shared experience of losing somebody who served in the military, that can be therapeutic as well, right? Having that sort of community. You know, could you touch on that as well?
Oh, yeah. So when I first got involved in TAPS, because I was still in that mode of I don't deserve, I'm second class, I have to serve, my dad died too long ago, I was reaching out to volunteer. I'm like, put me to work kind of thing. So, of course, my first event that I went to was Nationals. Also, it was a great excuse to be able to go back and visit my dad's grave, you know, sure. Which I love it. Actually, it's weird as that sounds. My dad's grave is one of my favorite places on earth. It's just Arlington. How can you not?
Yeah, right.
But anyway, when I got there, they have this thing called TAPS magic, and it sounds cheesy, but it is a real thing, and they call it the TAPS family. And again, I kind of roll my eyes, but I don't. So I remember getting there, and I'm like, put me to work, and they're like, you know, no, you're here to heal. I'm like, that's cute, but my dad died forever ago, and, you know, put me to work. And they're like, you'd be surprised how soon you're going to find people who understand you. And that was such a foreign concept to me because, again, I'm seeing all these people who, you know, they just buried daddy a year ago or, you know, whatever. I'm like, anyway. So I go and I pick up my little shirt, my T-shirt, my little bag. And there's this girl and she hands it to me and she's got, you know, the little lanyard where it says, you know, Navy and adult child or whatever. So and I looked at her. So I'm like, oh, my gosh, my dad was Navy, too. And she's like, yeah, but mine's different. She kind of was quiet. She's like, my dad died a long time ago. I don't really remember him. I'm like, so, I mean, that's one of the.
So she was right. You found your.
Instant.
Your people instantly almost, right?
Yeah. And then I got into it. Like, I mean, people are like, my aunt was like, why would I ever want to go to a place where people are like ruminating on death and everything. And they like to call TAPS the happiest group of sad people you'll ever meet. And it's really hard to explain unless you've been there. But the biggest takeaway from me was, you know, validation. I guess that's a weird way of putting it, but it was like learning that everything that I'd felt, my fears, the anxieties, the self-doubt, the things like that, they were discussed in an open forum in different workshops. And it's nice because it's like you can choose to go to these workshops or to not. Mm-hmm. It's TAPS has helped over, I think it's getting to 100,000 military families. I mean, they've grown like crazy. But like my experience going to nationals the first time, I mean, they roll out the red carpet, you know, you get fed, but you get to go and go to workshops. They have discussion groups where, you know, you can openly share about your loved one. And Bonnie's biggest thing is love lives on. And again, some people might not necessarily agree with this, but it's very much like they support that our loved ones are still there. And that's one thing that I'm very passionate about, is that they're still there. They still want to connect with you. And again, like we said all along, you have that right. And but the love lives on is what Bonnie talks about a lot. And I can't remember the exact like tag, but go to taps.org and you'll see things about, you know, nationals, which is amazing. And then also they have different things, like they have the regional seminars where there's one in Destin Beach, I know, this coming February for the Southeastern. And they've got them like different times of the year. With nationals, you pay for your hotel, but then the event itself is like $25 or something, and it's 4 days, and you get fed. You really get fed. Really get fed. But the seminars, all you have to pay for is your transportation to get there, and you show up, and it is just this open, amazing, almost like you can breathe. You know, like you can talk, you can cry. There's no judgment at all. So many different resources. But the biggest thing for me was, even this last time that I went, I'd gone three times before COVID hit. I got married, like all these crazy things. And I noticed that my anxiety was kind of getting up and, you know, talking to different therapists. Therapy, by the way, can't stress enough how amazing that is. But with TAPS, I remember going down just this last year and hearing people talk about like triggers and just things that I needed to know. Mm-hmm. And it cut my anxiety in half.
Wow.
Like, it's, you know, I really can't. It has, from the first time I went, like every time I go to TAPS, it changes me for the better.
Well, and it's great that there's this resource available too. You know, you have this organization that exists to help the families of, you know, fallen service members, and coming together, like in your case, you said you met someone almost instantly who basically shared a very similar story to yours, even though you thought your story was so unique and so out there that that nobody could possibly understand me, or nobody can understand this story. But like you don't, almost like you weren't deserving of the support that they offered because it was so long ago. But you know, I use this this example on this podcast quite a bit, but you know, if you have two people who are drowning, and one person's drowning in 2 feet of water, and if their head's being held under, I don't know, whatever, someone who's drowning in 20 feet of water, they both drowned. Like,
right.
You can't compare the like who drowned worse. I don't know. They're both dead at this point. They both drowned. Right. It sucked for both of them. And so take this out to somebody like you, who your father died years ago, versus somebody else whose family member may have died months or, you know, just like maybe a year ago. They both suck. The situations both suck. You can't.
Yeah, I can't sugarcoat it.
You can't you can't sugarcoat that and somehow magically make one better than the other, more palatable. It's like a life was lost, period. End of story. Like, that is terrible. I don't care when it happened or who it happened to. It's still terrible. And allowing yourself to be able to talk to people who are coming from a similar background with that shared experience, to share stories, share resources or how-tos, maybe, you know, how did you navigate this time of life or whatever, you know, that to me is really important because, you know, like you spent years basically on your own, basically thinking to yourself that you weren't good enough. You weren't this, you were, you know, all these things, this negative self-talk, you're beating yourself up inside. Whereas had you had a group of people like this who just got it and you could talk to, you would have been like, oh, this is just a thing that happens. It sucks, but it's a thing that happens to people. And there's nothing wrong with me, you know, in this case, right? There was nothing wrong with you. There still isn't anything wrong with you. You didn't do anything wrong to cause this or to deserve this, right? But sometimes you need to have that validation like you were talking about.
Well, yeah. And it's interesting too, because it's like, I see all these kids growing up now and, you know, like you were saying back then, I'm like, I don't deserve this special treatment or anything like that. And people would be like, you lost your dad in the service of our country.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you do. And, you know, there's that. And again, not like I have to have permission for good things. I know that I got definitely more confidence than that. But just, it's interesting to see the little kids and how they interact. It's almost kind of like, I keep using the term breathe again. And but you see them getting together with their friends, their good grief camp, because they have good grief camp there. And some of my closest friends, they're widows. Mm-hmm. And they had little teeny kids. And like, all these kids are growing up. And it's funny, not funny, but it's interesting. It's kind of cool that a lot of kids will skip their high school graduation to make sure that they're at TAPS Nationals, and they walk across the stage at TAPS because it's just, it's their family. It's people that they feel like they can completely be themselves around, and just, it's a very, very safe space.
Yeah. That's awesome. And I'm glad that you shared the resources that TAPS has to offer. And I know there's probably more that are available on their website. I'll have a link to that in the show notes for folks to check out. So that way they can, you know, if they're in that position where they think that kind of service might be something of benefit to them, they can go check that out. But if you had like one message to share with folks who might be on a similar journey than, you know, as you, dealing with a loss the way that you did, whether that loss happened last week or it happened 50 years ago, what would your message be?
For starters, there is no timeline for grief, no starting, no end. If you feel like crying, cry, because it's like allowing them to be in your life.
Sure.
Allowing yourself to cry is the best way, because another thing, and this is very bold, but if you think they're there with you, they probably are. I've had enough experiences in my life that I cannot argue away. I mean, this book, things that came about in this book, which there's some crazy, I don't use the crazy, but some amazing miracles that happened because I felt like I had thoughts that came out of nowhere. But anyway, long story short, my whole point is, if you think they're talking to you, they probably are. And what's the harm in believing it unless you're going to go off and do something stupid? So, yeah, be careful of that. But,
sure.
But so, yeah, one is allow yourself to cry when you need to. Number two is, if you think they're there, they probably are. Allow yourself to love them. And don't expect to ever completely not miss them, because I feel like that's where a lot of the damages occur. Three, get some therapy. Research, find a good therapist. Not every kind of therapist is for everybody.
That's right.
And the last one is just allow yourself time. Like maybe on the anniversary of the day that they died, allow yourself time to still incorporate and allow them to be in your life, because I think, you know, we don't need to lose them more than once. So
that's right.
And find community.
That's right. Yeah,
find
that's community. A good point. Got it. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And community, I think that that's also important, but I like the thing that you said that we don't need to lose them more than once. You know, it was hard enough to bury them once. We don't need to relive that and torture ourselves with that trauma over and over and over again. Right. Just be okay with, you know, remember the good times if you have those memories. In your case, you know, you don't have those memories, but you do probably have memories of those times. Like you said, you know, if you think they're there, you probably have memories of those times and okay, fine. Well, if you believe in your heart that he's there and he's with you, well, that's a time that you have spent together. You can remember those times, right? And just kind of have those kind of memories, or even the stories, like even if that's not something that you believe, you know, for the listeners, you don't believe, if the person's there, they're there, or if you feel like they're there. If you don't believe that, you know, stories from other people, you know, you said you had those battle buddies that you talked to, who shared stories of who your dad was, you know, talk to people about those people and, you know, find out who they were. And I know when I lost my brother, I talked to people that he served with, and some of the stories that they told me were they're absolutely hilarious stories. And he, it doesn't surprise me because he was a funny guy, to begin with, but, some of the things were just absolutely, absolutely hilarious. And, you know, even the day that he died, after his death, there were still funny stories about him. As tragic as his death would be, there were still funny things. So like, I can think back at that and I'm like, yep, that's him. Like if he had to go one way, it would be that way. And it would be, you know, in a way that leaves a smile on somebody's face, you know? And so you can think about those things and be grateful that you have those kind of memories, perhaps as well. Right.
Yeah. And that connection, whatever that connection means to you, whether it be you just feeling the cheesy statement, but warm fuzzies, just, you know, but it's like, that's the best way I can think of is connection, whether you believe that they're with you and they're there in spirit, or it's just like that, you know, like I said, it's just, it's pretty incredible that I think allowing ourselves to have those experiences, whatever they mean to us, is what takes the sting away from the grief, at least a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
When things go sideways, will you be prepared? Some people are concerned they might have to go for a long time without electricity or even food. That's why I want to introduce you to 4patriots.com. Get preparedness products you can use now and that could save your life later. My favorite is 4patriots' new solar generator, the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It uses the endless free power of the sun to power lights, your TV, medical equipment, even run your fridge. Plus, it's expandable and comes with a free solar panel. Or pick up one of 4patriots' best-selling survival food kits. Delicious tasting and designed to last for 25 years. They even have kits with real meat, and if the power's out, no worries. Just boil water over a fire, simmer, and serve. You'll enjoy a hot meal and stay safe in a crisis. More smart people than ever are finding 4patriots. Over 2 million customers trust them, and you might have even seen them on TV. I had the folks at 4patriots set up a special page for you at 4patriots.com/drive-on so that listeners of this podcast can see this week's discounts and deals before they go away. Go to 4patriots.com/drive-on, but hurry, these deals won't last long. Save more and get peace of mind now by going to 4patriots.com/drive-on.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, before we wrap up this show, I like to add some humor to the end of shows, especially on episodes where, you know, the subject is a little maybe heavier or a little darker, you know, like just like to lighten the mood a little bit for some folks and, you know, especially the listeners who might be going through a hard time. And maybe this is the only smile that gets put on their face all day. So a lot of times are corny jokes. If you can humor me with a laugh, I'd appreciate it.
But, you're a dad. You're allowed dad jokes.
That's what I get. I've been a dad now for 14 plus years now, and I have to perfect the dad jokes, I guess. So, anyways, so there's a teenager. She brings home her new boyfriend to meet her parents, and immediately they're appalled by his haircut, his tattoos, piercings, all these things just wrong with him, right? And after he leaves later that night, the girl's mom says to her, "He does not seem like a very nice boy. I don't think you should be seeing him." And the girl goes, "Please, Mom, if he wasn't nice, would he be doing 500 hours of community service?"
Oh.
I love the expression on your face when the light bulb.
I'm kind of an airhead. It takes me a minute to catch things. That's awesome.
For the listeners, if you didn't get it, he's doing the community service because he got arrested.
That's hilarious. Oh, that poor girl. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyways, awesome. Thank you for humoring me with a laugh on that. Anyways.
No, that was awesome.
And thank you again for sharing your story and your book again. The name of the book, and we'll have links and stuff for the listeners for the book. But can you remind us of the book?
Yes, it's called Angel in Arlington. It's basically about how my experience facing my dad, killer, like digging into my grief and connecting, and how that brought me the freedom from my fears. So it's Angel in Arlington. My website is angelinarlington.com. That's where most of the things are going to be on. We don't have a release date yet, but I am working on like getting more resources and things like that. I'm really excited about it. It's been a long process, but it's in the hands of an agent right now. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, yeah. When the book comes out, be sure to send me over the information. I'll update the show notes with the links, and I'll also share it out on social media for anyone who is following Drive On Podcasts on social media. I'll be sure to share it there as soon as I get the information. So thank you again for taking the time to join us. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for what you're doing. It's amazing and very needed. So, Ian, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.